Are listening to Intentional Talk Radio. It is a Wednesday. Would you believe it is Wednesday already? My, how time flies. We must be having a good time. Well, we do right here on Intentional Talk Radio Network. Thank you for joining us. It is ITRNradio.com. You can find this and all of your favorite broadcasts on all of your favorite major podcast platforms. It is a hump day. Right here on ITRNradio.com, we're ready for In the Mix, Conversations with Colette and Corliss. Get ready. It is hump day already. Let's get this party started.
Well, good evening, good afternoon, happy Tuesday if you're on Tuesday? Happy Thursday if you're on. You know what? It's all starting to blend. It really is. I was trying to make sure. Blend and blur. Right. Blend it. Oh, wait, I can change this. I was trying to make sure to turn the light. There we go. Okay.
Time goes by so fast.
Better. Okay. All right. I couldn't see myself without the wonderful, bright, lovely sunshine that we have here in Southern California. It started off with a lot of clouds, and all of a sudden it just burned off, and the sky is so beautiful and blue. It's a good day in the neighborhood, so nothing really going on. I'm glad to that, you know, we don't have too much happening out this way. No more cows on the freeway. That was just too much, I tell you. But, you know, we have a police chase every other day. I'm just like, and the thing is, they take
No. Not a police chase every other day. Multiple police chases every day.
And what's so crazy about it is that they take away from the regular programming. Like, yes. I mean, like, it's just, this is something. Like, we got to, you know, we got to show this man running around, driving erratically, doing whatever he's going to do. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, y'all could have, you know, we didn't need to see all of that. But I think that makes news.
It isn't. It's no longer newsworthy because they do too many things to endanger too many people because they let it go on, and on. And they don't stop it when they should. They can stop that, but they don't do it. They let it go from county to county, city to city, state to state, place to place, on and on. He's driving erratically. Oh, he's doing this. He's going to really endanger lives. Oh, stop it. You guys stop black folks whenever you want to. Stop that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's funny.
Stop that. You let a high speed chase or a low speed chase, you let it go on for hours. But let that be a black man who didn't stop at that red light. You're going to get him and you're going to shoot him in the back.
Right.
Okay.
Shoot and kill him.
But you let a high speed chase go on with some real hardened criminals. Some not only hardened criminals, but some illegal criminals who crossed the border to come over here to create havoc. And you let them continue to go and go and go.
Right. You're right.
How does that make sense? Come on. How does that make sense? Anyway, don't get me started because you know I will.
Right. Well, we have a great guest today. I met her at a fair. She was walking around and talking about her book. And I thought, oh my God, this is wonderful. And when she started telling me, I said, well, what made you do this? And she started telling me, I said, no, don't tell me anymore. Save that for the show. I want you to be on the podcast. She was like, huh? I said, nope. Don't say anymore. I don't want to hear nothing about it until you get on air and we can talk about it. But, Miss Tiffany, I want her to discuss the whole concept of how she came around to make an Afrocentric coloring book called The Hues of Africa, Journey Between the Lines. So it's an actual coloring book, Colette, and she has, we'll hear more about it. But when I saw that, I thought, oh wow, what an interesting topic for In the Mix. So hello, Miss Tiffany.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. So tell us a little bit about yourself. We always like to get the background, like where are you from?
I am from Los Angeles, California, born and raised.
Okay, where'd you go to high school?
I went to King Drew Medical Magna High School.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, King Drew. I know it very well, very well. Was Miss Green Golden there when you were there?
Yes, she's still there.
Famous counselor, man. She was helping those kids get into college. So that's my girl. Matter of fact, I need to call her, see how she's doing. So, okay. So you went to King Drew. And then from there, what did you do?
For college, I went to Cal State Long Beach for undergrad. And then I went to Howard University for grad school.
Oh, wonderful.
And both my degrees are in social work.
Okay. So are you a social worker by day?
Yes, social worker by day and other stuff by night.
Okay, so that means I got to pull you and make sure you're on my Mindful Monday show for one of the topics and things that you like to discuss. So we'll talk about that later. Anytime I meet a social worker, a counselor, I'm like, "Ooh, you need to be on my Mindful Monday show. What do you want to talk about? So today, so when we met, you had this coloring book and you were talking about how you started to think about doing this. So give us the backdrop of the whole thing about the coloring book.
Okay. So the coloring activity book is called Hues of Africa, Journey Between the Lines. And so when I said other stuff by night, I am a traveler, I'm a blogger, a YouTuber, and now an author. And so I do group trips, and we all know during the pandemic, we couldn't move anywhere.
Right.
So I had 15 people signed up for a group trip to Colombia, and I said, oh, I'm pretty sure the pandemic will be over. Who knew that the pandemic would be 2 years later? So I decided, okay, well, how else could we do something during the pandemic since we can't do group trips? So I came up with the thought of a coloring activity book. And so the coloring activity book is, it really depicts my love for Africa. I started my first international trip with the Cal State Long Beach. And so we did a summer study abroad program to Ghana, West Africa.
Oh, I've been to Ghana. I bet that was nice. Did you do the Amina Castle?
Oh yeah, we were there. I was there for 6 weeks. So we
got a chance to travel. Oh my God, you did everything. Oh my God. Yes. Oh.
So because of that trip, I fell in love with Ghana. And of course, I've been back to Ghana about 6 times since then.
Oh, wow.
And so this book, although I've only been to 4 places in Africa, Ghana, South Africa, Burkina Faso, and Morocco, the book has at least 30 different countries in the book. And so people always think it's just a coloring book, but it's actually so much more. There's coloring on one side and there's an activity on the other side. So if we're talking about Ghana, there's going to be somebody in an African attire, but then there's going to be a word search. Or if we're talking about Eritrea, there's going to be crossword puzzles. So it's very informational. In the beginning of the books, talks about hair, language, music, just to get you a feel of Africa. Then you're going to go into the separate countries and learn more.
So tell us about, so go into those topics. You said hair. What do you discuss as far as hair?
So we're talking about the different hairstyles. Are there goddess braids? Like where did hair originate from? So we're talking about the history of hair, and it's like a fill in the blank. We're talking about fabrics. You guys can't see the fabric on my head, but I have a scarf on. And so there are different ankara fabrics. So you're choosing the definition with the fabric, because some people don't know the different definitions. We're talking about food. What is food from the West versus the East versus the South versus the North? They were talking about music. You know, music is huge in the African culture. What type of instruments are there? What is being played? So those are the different things that is going on at the very beginning of the book.
So go back into this music piece. So when you say the music, you're not talking about just listening to R&B. These people are actually playing the instruments.
Yeah, this doesn't even have anything to do with R&B. These are the instruments, like the drums that they play. You know, drums is very significant in African culture. It was used to send messages. They didn't have phones back in Africa back in the day. So they used drums to communicate. They used drums for partying. It's also used at funerals. So there are different types of instruments that are displayed on the activity page.
Interesting. What are the other, like, as far as you say drums were used to send messages, were there any other instruments that sent messages, or that were, you know, this, we only play the saxophone for this particular thing, or, you know, I mean, go in a little more depth when you talk about the music.
Yeah, so no saxophones or different things like that. I wish I could, but we can't see, so I guess that we have to do a imagery, I guess. There's also, what is that, like a xylophone? There's like a version of a xylophone. So those different, like, and it's also the rhythm and the beats, like different beats are saying different things when you're playing that particular drum. And so we also learned that in Ghana, we took a dancing and drumming classes. And so they were like, okay, if your hand is this way, or if it's is this tone on that drum, this means something else. So that's what we talk about when we talk about the different instruments.
Wow. And so they use that to communicate to other tribes, or
to other tribes within themselves. If there was something going on that needed to be alert, that drum could be used for that. There's so many different things. And then of course we use it to just a party. Like, we want to have a good time. So there's dancing with the drums. In the funerals, there's a big thing, using the drums as well. So I was happy to be able to purchase drums and bring them back. I left it at our church, so they can drum on it anytime that they want to.
Did you have an opportunity to see a funeral in Ghana? Because they are no joke with those funerals.
Yes, I was able to. One time I was there, we went to the village for a funeral. And so the funeral, I feel like our funerals happen very quickly over here. Over there, the funerals can take days, or it can even take months before the burial process starts.
Right, right.
So there's like a whole, we do elaborate affairs, but there's nothing like.
when we were on the bus, when was that? 2001. And we were on the bus and we slowly went by. They had the music going. It had to be 200 people there. It had to be. And then the families, they wear almost like a wedding, because I've been to, an African wedding, not necessarily the neon wearing, but an African wearing where, like, this family, you wore this fabric, and then this family wore this fabric, and then, you know, then the mother of the bride and their family, you know, her that side. And it was just so intense. Like, I was like, this is really something. But that funeral was just, you know, the procession in, and, you know, how they were doing, because we stopped and got out and just was watching. And I thought, wow, I mean, it was truly, you know, what we try to do for funerals, a celebration of that person. And they really celebrated. And I just thought, wow, this is something else.
Awesome how music is used for different things in different languages and cultures. And this is one of the reasons why I love to travel. And that's the reason why I created the book, because sometimes we have negative images of Africa. They're poor. I know growing up on my TV, it would be the starving children that came on at midnight.
Right.
And so these are the images that they're showing. They're not showing positive images. And I'm like, no, we need to show positive images. We come from kings and queens. Everybody in Africa is not poor. And so I think these things need to be showcased. And so that's what I wanted to create within this book as well.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, you go with these preconceived notions about what it is because that's what they show us on TV, like you said. And then I know when I got there, I was like, okay, looking around and I was like, well, where are the huts? And I hated that I asked, you know what I'm saying? Because that's what they show us in America, right? And I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, this is just a regular old street with cars and, you know, stayed at a hotel because I went with what they call a fame trip, a familiarization trip through a travel agent. Trip. And so then when we were driving to the Kumasi weaving village, I had taken a nap, and when I opened my eyes, I thought I was rolling down Crenshaw. I swear I thought I opened my eyes and I had to remember, like, where am I? Like, you know how you just have this, you're just out of sorts, and I'm looking out the window and I'm like, where am I? And I'm like, I'm on the bus. And then I look out and I'm looking at, you know, cell phone ads and hair and, you know, different, and I'm just like, okay, where are we? And they're like, girl, we're in Africa, girl, you know? And I was like, oh, I was very surprised. And you're so right about the fact that they have brainwashed us with this, you know, poor children with a big stomach, they're hungry, give us $2 a day, you know, all that. And it's nothing like that.
My daughter went to South Africa. Actually, she went to three countries in Africa. And she said, South Africa, especially, just like here.
Yeah.
It's just like here. And people go to South Africa because South Africa is just like here. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of flooding and torrential rain going on in South Africa right now. And you're looking at the cars and the landscape and all that. It looks just like a flood here.
Right.
Cars look like the cars here. But the myth is that people are living in huts and they're tribal and they are, they have nothing that is sophisticated. They are living like, what's the word? Not prehistoric, but they're living backwards. They don't have anything that is current. And that is not true, not even in the least. In fact, the billionaires, the black billionaires are in Africa. There are more billionaires who are women in Africa, in Nigeria, in Kenya, in South Africa, not here, there. And the list came out and people thought, nothing. They're there and they're doing what needs to be done. They are making the real way. Right. But the myth is that Africans live in tribes. They live like backwards. They don't have any kind of modern services. Which is a bold-faced lie. They just want us to believe that. They want us to think that. And that's a lie.
Yeah, when I went to, South Africa, and it was like a 24-hour, longest flight ever I've been on thus far.
longest.
It was like a 24-hour flight. And when I got there, the same thing, I was like, wait, I flew 24 hours to be just like back at home in America. The freeways, there's McDonald's, there's KFC, there's, you know, all the things that look like back at home. And I think that's why it's important to travel so that you can bust the myths that are out there. Right. South Africa is absolutely beautiful. And a lot of these places are westernized. A lot of places are westernized. So the clothes that you see, they walking around looking just like what I would wear.
Yes.
They do have obviously their tribal wear and different things like that, but it's not something that you may see all this, especially the younger generation. They don't wear that stuff all this time.
They wear jeans and t-shirts, exactly. Just like kids do here.
And then the other thing too is there are poor people in Africa. There are people
poor
that live
people
in,
here.
There are people, exactly. There are people that live in huts, but we live in LA. I go across the bridge or downtown, it's the homeless people right there.
Right. Exactly.
So you have to realize that, again, homeless people are everywhere. So we shouldn't make these stereotypes about one because really the continent is bigger than North America. Yeah. So it's interesting how we make these judgments based off of really what we've seen or what we haven't seen with our own eyes.
Right. And we are indoctrinated to believe that they're uncivilized. People in Africa are uncivilized. They don't have modern advances. They have not come up in the times. They don't know anything. In fact, my daughter also went on safari in the Serengeti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she went on safari in the Serengeti. And they stayed several hours with the Maasai tribe. And the Maasai people are very, very tall people. And they stand around gathered and they jump high. They jump really, really high to see who jumps the highest. And they're all over 6 feet tall and slender. And of course, their clothing is just absolutely amazing. But the Maasai people keep to themselves because they don't want to be westernized. Mm. They don't want to be westernized. So they continue to speak their language and they continue to live the way they want to live, but they do not want to be westernized. And that was the only real tribal living that they engaged with, because everything else was like South Africa. She went to South Africa. She went to the Serengeti, and I believe she went to either Kenya or Tanzania. And she loves Africa. I'm going sometime soon. I can't tell you date, time, and where I'm going to stay, but I'm going. Mark my word. I made that promise to my mother. I'm going.
So getting back to the coloring book, so you were able to infuse all these different things that you learned by staying in Africa or in Ghana for 6 weeks and create this coloring book. Tell us a little bit more about how you went about that.
So because I only know about four of those countries, and each country has two pages, technically, activity and coloring page, the rest of it, I had to do the research. So it was actually fun to learn about the Maasai tribe, to learn about Rwanda, the gorillas, how clean the country is. And so it really got me excited to make sure that I traveled to all these destinations that are in my book. I want to stand next to, my Tanzania page has the Rock Restaurant, which is out on the ocean. Like, I want to go to Tanzania and like stand with my book next to it and take that photo. So it was a lot of research that had to be done into it, but it was amazing just to see the different countries and the different tribes and, you know, what they're doing. Like, the research part is tedious, but amazing at the same time, because I'm learning as I'm teaching other people through the book.
Wow. Do you have a book with you now? Do you have a book with you now?
Do you have your book here?
Is this visual?
We can see it. She just wants to see what it looks like.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I went to the car earlier too. I left it in the car, so I don't have the visual. Maybe before we end the episode, I can go down and show it to y'all.
Okay.
But the copy I have is downstairs. Sorry about that. But yeah, so the book is going really, really well. I'm super excited about it. And we are officially have sold over 500 copies so far.
Oh, wow.
Great. How long has the book been out?
The book has been about, it's not quite a year yet. So it's been out for about 11 months or so. So, as me being a first time author and this being an untraditional book, it's not a novel. I'm really, really proud of where we are thus far and hope to go even further.
Wow. Okay. Now tell us a little bit, because you did this on your own, or did you have publicists? I mean, as far as coming to being able to put a book and being able to get it on, you know, I guess on Amazon and other places. Tell us about that process.
Yes, so it's basically self-published. So I do the activities on my own by myself. I don't have assistance with that. And then I hire an illustrator to do the illustrator. Unfortunately, I wasn't blessed in that area, so I did have to hire someone.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly. So basically we're on Amazon, we're on Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble. All these are online and they ship it straight to your house, or you can get it shipped to the store and you can pick it up there.
Wow. And so you just literally said, okay, I'm going to create this. You have to instill illustrator, and it was just like, okay, here it is. I mean,
I'm a procrastinator, so I hope if you're an upcoming author, I hope you're not like me. But in the instance, if I calculated all the months together, it probably was less than a year for me to do it. Because I would take months off and then I would get back to it. And that's another thing of being an author. You have to persevere because stuff is going to come your way. For example, I always tell the story about my Egypt page. I hired an illustrator to do the Egypt page. Wonderful. And I said, let's go, ready to do the book. And he ghosted me. Wow. So for 3 months, I was like, well, what do I do? I'm so sad. I can't go on. And I was like, wait, Tiffany, he's not the only illustrator. Get back on there and find somebody.
So when you hire an illustrator, it only's for one page?
So what I do is I like to test out my illustrators to see if we're gonna work well together. So when we did the one page, it worked well, or so I thought it would work well, but for whatever reason, he wasn't interested in going on. So I said, okay, then we'll just go and hire another illustrator. And that's what we did. And so my second illustrator, he done all the rest of the pages. So,
You said he ghosted you?
Like ghosted means like, he just was like, no, I can't do it. Or either he just stopped responding altogether. Yeah. So that's kind of what ghosted me. Like a ghost.
That's a new term that somebody ghosts you. I didn't quite get it. Like, okay. I mean, I know what it means, but it's like ghost. Okay. So you just
ghost means like bye. They leave you. Let me tell you, that's a term that's used in the new age relationships. If you're talking to somebody and they just stop talking to you, they'll say the term, oh, they ghosted me.
Why don't they just say, well, they're ignoring me?
Ghosted means like they're gone. A difference.
Ignore means they're gone.
Well, ignore means they can come back. Ignore that can ignore you for today or tomorrow. Ghosting means like they're completely gone. I've never heard from them again.
So there's a difference between ghosting somebody and ignoring somebody?
It's funny. It's the new age lingo and we've caught on to it. And those are just words that we use now. If you try to figure it out, you'll be confused because some of the stuff I'm like, huh? What does that mean? I get the term ghosting, but disappear with no explanation. Exactly. Cause we're going a little bit off topic, but in relationships, they literally will leave you alone and not tell you. I think the mature way is to let me know why you don't want to talk to me no more, but everybody don't do that. So we just, go along with that. Is the book in audio form? The book is not in audio form, but that is a great idea to kind of put something together. And so it's funny you talk about audio form because I was thinking about kind of doing like a summer camp this summer. Cause you are for anybody out there that's trying to be an author, you have to be creative and you have to market yourself like every day. Nobody knows that you have this book out there. So I was myself, since it's been over a year, I've got to all of my rounds with family and friends and all that kind of stuff. So I was thinking about doing a summer camp where actually we're going through the book because people can buy this book on their own. But the summer camp would be for, I remember when I was out of school, my brain went blank sometimes in the summertime. So to keep that brain wave going, I want to do a summer camp with the kids where I'm actually going through the book with them so that we can learn about Africa together.
So I guess maybe you can do that through your church or something, huh?
Yeah. Well, church through anybody, it will almost be like, if somebody has a home, if the kids are at home, they can utilize me. It could be a church, a school. It could be your kids at home. If you know people, if you have nieces and nephews, we'll sign up with Miss Tiffany. We're going to meet twice a week and we're going to go through the book together. Because I have done this before actually with the church group. They were about 8 to 11 years old and they really, really loved it. They were very enthused about it. And I was surprised because it was on Zoom. And Zoom, they've been on Zoom for forever and sometimes they're not attentive, but this group was really, really attentive. And so I thought that's why, the summer camp could work.
Wow. So if summer camp, when will you make a decision? Because I could see this being integrated into other lessons. So you did it online. Are you going to do it online this time?
Yes, it would be virtual because I would want to capture as many people. So they don't have to be just in LA. Of course, if we could do it in person, that would be cool too. But, you know, to find a venue and all that kind of stuff. So yes, it would be virtual. That way we can reach past, you know, California.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it would be great to integrate that with another curriculum. It would be great to do that because there are customs and foundational information that kids don't get here, especially African American kids. They don't get it here. We are indoctrinated to think one way, their way. And if kids were able to look at how life is really lived, how people live in Africa, because it is very different from here, and it is not a jungle.
But there are some parts of it that is now. So, I mean, there are some huts and things, you know, but you kind of have to go out a little bit. And that's why when we were on my trip, I was like, all of a sudden we kind of went out and I was like, oh, okay. And people walking around with things on their head or whatever. And they work. And I was like, okay, now this is what I figured, you know, Africa was about, but we had to go out, really out away.
Yeah, go outside of the
away from Kumasi to really, see all this. And it was just like, okay, wow. Oh, you know, they have the University of Ghana and we went through there. But I mean, it is definitely something. I just remember, like you said, that flight is forever. And so when we got off the plane, they don't have the jet, the jet rails. You get off and you get off on land and then you walk
the jetway.
Jetway. So there's no jetway. So when we got off, me and my best friend Nina, and we stood there and we're like, oh my God. We're in Africa. I said, oh my God. I just leaned down and kissed the ground. I just leaned down and I said, oh my God, this is where it all started. And we are here. And it was so, emotional. And so, you know, when you talk about the things that are in your book, all the different things, it's like, we just don't get that in our lessons here in America. So when you have an opportunity to go and learn about, you know, like I said, the Kumasi tribe or going to the Amino Castle. I mean, every time I think about a small room and how they just pack those slaves, the girls in one room and the guys in the other, and they pack them in, you know, five, 100 to 200 in the room. And then when the king felt like he wanted to have sex, he'll point out, okay, give me Jessica. And then the guy would snatch her. She fight. No. They showered her up, did her hair, whoever the ladies were, did her makeup, had made her look really pretty so that he can just rape her all night long. And I was just like, wow, this is really something how they treated the slaves, you know?
Right. And in 19, the year of return, the NAACP coordinated a trip to Ghana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know about that?
In 2019?
Yes.
No, I was dealing with my
19 phone. was the year of return.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, they took 275 people to Ghana. And when a friend of mine told me that he went with the whole group, which was the NAACP, I said, that was all. He said, that was a lot. I said, that no, 275 people from this country, only 275. If I had known about it, I would have scraped every penny to go on that trip. I would have done everything I could because they went to I don't remember the name of the place that they went to, but they went to the ship. They went to where the slaves were kept.
Yeah, and that's Amina Castle.
Okay. And everybody that I know, in fact, Dr. Emel from Kaiser, Baldwin Hills, he went on the year of return. Everybody that went came back a different person.
Oh yeah. It'll change it.
Yes.
I mean, to see it live. And I know, and you said, Tiffany, you've been there 5 or 6 times, girl.
Yes. So the last time I went was for the year of return, and I brought people back with me as well. I had a very, very small group, but we were there for 10 days and they absolutely loved it. Yeah. Everybody's crying at the airport. Nobody was ready to leave. So imagine they only got 10 days and my first trip was for 6 weeks. So imagine, like you said, how people feel. They're like, that was the best trip I've ever had. So yeah, we went to Elmina. Actually, there's two different castles. They're very close to each other, but we went to Elmina Castle, and then there's another one not too far from me. But yeah, it is like crazy to like think that what was going on, and yes, the story that you told is what was happening. And actually, I think there's a scripture that was where they held church right above where these things were going on.
Right. Like it's nothing. They hallelujahing and praying to the Lord, but they're raping the girls or beating the guys. And I just like, and then they try to spin it and say it's in the name of religion. And I just was like, this is too much.
Right. Exactly. And then this is why when you talk about religion, you don't pay attention to man, because man is going to create anything that they want and use it to their benefit. Right. This is not a religious show, but that's why I say you got to focus on God and not those people around, because those people around will have you thinking all kind of crazy thoughts because of how they twist things to make it for their use. And obviously God was not with what they were doing.
So
actually Cape Coast, where Elmina Coast, was actually my favorite spot out of the cities. One, because it's small, it's by the water, it's like calming. Everything is kind of more slow in Cape Coast versus Kumasi, which is a large city. There are people bustling about, going to the market is a lot. I'm at Accra, obviously that's the main city. There's like so much going on. So I really like the calmness of Cape Coast, which is actually in between Accra and Kumasi. So it's definitely one of my favorites, even though that particular site obviously is, you know, a sad occasion. Just if you go outside of that particular thing, then you definitely can enjoy and relax in the city.
And the fact that they call it a castle, like really, you know, that you think of castle, you think of kings and queens and, you know, just, you know, fabulous things. But that castle was not that.
No, it was where... It was where horrible things were committed.
And they had to do a door of no return. And that door was so small. Yes. And I'm like, I was like, how do you fit through here? But they barely ate. They were thin. And one of the things that really tripped me out when I was there, I thought my great, 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 somebody made it through that passage and got to the United States. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like when you think about
passage,
when you think about your own, you know, people can do their family tree or whatever, and you can only go back so far, but you know, it's great, 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 whatever. However, you know, that came to America and started your tree. And it's just like, that is so crazy, because there were so many slaves that died in the middle passage.
Yes, and so, that's right.
Be able to celebrate. So when you, I heard you say something about travel. So you do these trips, Tiffany? You do?
Yes. I wear a lot of hats. So as part of my traveling, I do organized group trips. So, the first trip was to Ghana. We've done a trip to Colombia, South America. And then we also do smaller trips, like this weekend, we're taking about 13 people over to Tijuana, Mexico for a group trip. So yes, I do coordinate group trips as well. And so add that to the list of all the many things that I do. I enjoy doing group trips because I like to travel and I want to take other people. It's like, there's one thing for me to post a video, write about a blog, but there's something about you actually being there with me to experience these things on your own. Now you get to share in the joy of Ghana or Colombia or whatever the case. And I've been able to do that through my experiences. So I do a lot of solo trips. So I will go on my solo trips and then I say, okay, I think we can curate a group trip. And so that's how the trips work.
Interesting.
So why are you going to Tijuana?
It's actually Rosarito, but we're going to have fun. We're going to eat lobster lunch. We're going to ride horses.
Lobster in Mexico is bomb. Oh my God.
We're going to ride horses. We're going to get together because some people are not from LA. And so they're like scared to go to Rosarito. Okay, well, let's take a group trip, meet other people. So we're going to have fun. I tend to go to Tijuana for dental work. And so I do that a lot solo. And then I've also met, there are other Black expats that are living in Tijuana, Mexico. So sometimes I meet up with my friends like, hey, let's hang out today. And so I've decided to do group trips. as a way to get away from California. Let's go have fun for today.
So did you say you go for the dentist? Did I hear you right?
Yes, lots of people do go to the dentist down there. I wouldn't.
I'm
but
cool.
A lot of people do. Yeah, I'm cool too. I'm not going to the dentist.
I'm cool.
I know some people that go to the dentist down there. I ain't going.
No, I love my dentist, so I'm good.
It's definitely not for everybody, but as an entrepreneur who doesn't have insurance, it's much cheaper. Even with people who do have insurance, we know they don't hardly cover anything when it comes to dental insurance, and you can have the best job ever. So dental work out there is an alternative. They speak English. I've gone because I've seen other people do, or somebody else recommended this particular dentist. Now I recommend my dad. He's done it. He's gotten all his work done. Now he goes without me.
Really?
So yeah, we haven't had any bad experiences, but yeah, I always say everything is not for everybody. You know, some like, I ain't doing this. Some people like, I do this. So I think it's like, whatever floats your boats, whatever works well for each other, is what we got to roll with.
So what's your next trip? And will you, and so, so that, and then will you start creating coloring books from all your, you know, excursions? That actually sounds like a plan.
So actually, the next book is actually about HBCUs. So I'm super, super excited about my HBCU book. We are working, and hopefully it will be out very soon. And I like the segue because we talked about Africa. Now the HBCUs begin in the 1800s. So that's kind of segueing into more stuff that we need to know about. I went to Howard, and so I'm absolutely proud to be talking about where a lot of us came from, a lot of us, the Martin Luther Kings, the Booker T. Washingtons, all started at these HBCUs. And so there are good products of that environment. So I'm excited to be on that same teaching path. And some people don't care about Africa, to be honest. Some people could care less about Hues of Africa. But bring it to the U.S. where a lot of us went to school at, people may be more interested in that. So we have to, you know, you write different things for different audiences. And so the goal with this book is to actually go to all the HBCUs that are in the book and do like a book tour and kind of be on campus and involved with the students and different things like that. So that is the next goal. And that is the next book that will be coming out.
And so will it be a coloring book or no?
Same format, coloring and activity book. So coloring on one side, activity book on the other side. And so I have to put emphasis on it's an activity book, because when people hear coloring, they kind of write it off. Oh, it's just a coloring book. But when they see the book, they realize it's way more than just the coloring book. The coloring book is not even that important, but my background is in social work. And so we all know coloring is a stress reliever. You get to move in that color back and forth.
You blending your skills in social work and putting this, you're right. I mean, yeah, coloring has become a thing, and a lot of adults do it now. And like
exactly.
You said, it's a calming situation. You know, you're focusing on being between the lines and trying to just relax from whatever it is. And for you, for your book, you're coloring, but you're learning something.
Exactly. That's exactly why we put the activity portion in there too, because I don't want you to just color. Like, that's great, you coloring, but you can color anything. What are you learning about that particular country? And so the same thing with the HBCU book, coloring on one side and then the activity on the other side. So the activity, they will get to learn about each of those colleges and anything related to HBCU life. So whether that's the sororities, the fraternities, you'll be able to learn about all of this in the book.
Have you talked to Teresa Price at the Black College Expo?
I have not talked to her, but my aunt knows her, and she did tell me to, or she was going to connect with her, I was going to reach out to her, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you should get in touch with Teresa. If you don't get in touch with her through your aunt, then I can certainly connect you with her, because she would just love that. She's been running the organization it's another name, but it's essentially the Black College Expo. But she has been running that, I want to say something very close to 20 years. I think it's been, yeah, just over 20 years. And she's been to all of the HBCUs, all of them. And all that she's done, in fact, she just recently talked about the fact that they have given, I believe it's $1 billion in scholarships. $1 billion in scholarships. Yes. Because she's so connected to the HBCUs that kids will go to the expo and they will get in just like that.
Right, on the spot.
And what, yeah, and what a lot of people don't really understand about HBCUs, it's the best of both worlds. My one daughter went to San Jose State University. The other one went to Texas Southern University. There's a gigantic difference between the two of them. Okay. And the education that kids get at HBCUs is really second to none. They get the best of both worlds. And Bill Gray, who was the president and CEO of UNCF, he talked about the education that kids get by going to an HBCU. And it is absolutely valuable. He says they turn coal into diamonds. And they do. They do. They really do.
Yeah, there definitely is a difference. I went to a PWI and HBCU, so two totally different experiences.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
And it sounds like Howard's approach to social work was totally different than San Jose's approach to social work.
Yes,
huh?
Absolutely. Yes. And one thing that happens at an HBCU is the relationship that is garnered by the student and the professor, it's lifelong. It's lifelong. And every student has a name. At San Jose State, Kiana was number 308, 3-something, 4-something in some of her classes because there were that many students in her class. And in fact, there were 32,000 plus students at San Jose State. And out of the 32,000 students at San Jose State, I want to say only 2,000 were Black. Something like that.
Yeah. And that's a lot. Yeah. But yeah. That's,
okay. 32,000 students.
It probably still comes to like 5 or 6% because that's the going rate.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous. So at Texas Southern, at that time, everybody was Black. Now, there are some issues because Black students are not going to HBCUs at the rate that they should be. So HBCUs are suffering because everybody goes to HBCUs now, especially if they want to go to somewhere like Howard or some of the medical schools. If they want to go to Thurgood Marshall School of Law, which is there at Texas Southern. So the schools with these stellar, almost Ivy League schools on the campus, all kinds of students are there. Every student that you can imagine. They come from India. They come from Asia. They come from all of those places to go to these colleges, and they can get in and they can get money to go.
Yeah.
They can get money to go. And at that time, I'll never forget, Corliss, I'm sure you remember Michael Smalley, who was the principal at YOU. Deborah Callahan was gone and Michael Smalley became the principal there. I gave him an article from the LA Times at that time. And this had to be in 2004, 5 or 6, somewhere like that. And I gave Mr. Smalley an article and it was from UCLA. And UCLA said that the class that they accepted had accepted something like 3,000 students. And out of the 3,000 students, 2,600 were Asian, I want to say 300 were Mexican, and then 106 were African Americans.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Always the lowest number. And UCLA recently has said their ideal student is a foreign student. They want to be known
as an international university.
International university. That's what they go after.
That's because they pay.
Yeah. International students.
They don't do loans and stuff. They pay. So what schools have you been to, Tiffany? What HBCUs have you already been to?
So we did a Black college tour way back in high school.
Oh,
So we did Clark Atlanta, Spelman, FAMU, Morris Brown. I'm probably forgetting a bunch. I've been out of high school for forever, but we did do a Black College tour. But there are so many that I have not been to. And again, doing the research for this book, I'm like, oh my God, the campus looks beautiful. Oh my God, they have this major, this minor. Oh my God, they have a museum. They have a planetarium. Like, I ain't know about all this stuff before me doing research for the book. Right. So I'm absolutely excited to partner with these colleges, because I'm ready to learn even more by being on campus. And the other interesting thing about the HBCUs, I just always assumed that the names of these schools are from Black people, and that's not always true either. So in research, just trying to see and be amazed at the different things and just the perseverance of people that came before me, like they persevered so that I can go, you know, 50, 60, 70 years later. I have to give honor to those who came before me so that I went, and then, you know, those people that are coming behind me. So I'm super, super excited, as I didn't do a book tour for Hues of Africa. So this will be an exciting endeavor.
So, yeah. So, you know, and we have so many. There's a couple in Ohio. I mean, it's these, because, you know, when you hear about HBCUs, you hear Howard, Spelman, Morehouse. And then when you do Morehouse and Spelman, then you got to add Clark Atlanta because it's right there, and Morris Brown because it's right there. And then you may hear something about TSU. You may hear something about, what's the one in Florida?
FAMU.
And so, but you don't hear that there's these other little Wilberforce and these other little places in Ohio, that have HBCUs. I did the Atlanta ones. I've only been to those. Oh no, did I go to FAMU? No, and I've been to, Baltimore, Morris Brown.
Morris is down.
What's the name of it?
Morgan. There's Morgan State.
Morgan State. I was so impressed by that campus. And I think, again, you know, you think about how you think it might be because it's a Black school, and it's just so much that people have put in your head over the years. And then you turn around and you go, and it's like, okay, this school looks better than USC per se, you know. Kiana, what are you talking about? There's an HBCU here in California.
No, yeah, it's Charles Drew. Yes,
well,
it is.
Charles Drew.
Yes, oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. Okay. Exactly. But it's a medical, it's the medical school that's the HBCU, not necessarily the, yeah, okay. But it's not, it's
but it is
different.
It's a HBCU, even though it's a specialty. Yeah, nevertheless, it is an HBCU, yeah.
Yeah,
and that's and the Meharry thing. Meharry is one of the top medical schools in the country. Meharry is. And you never hear anything about Meharry, but you sure, there are a whole lot of doctors that came from Meharry.
Where's Meharry?
Meharry is on the East Coast.
It's in Tennessee.
That's what I thought. Isn't it in Tennessee? Because I did visit Fisk. I did visit Fisk, now that I think about it. I was in Nashville for a conference, and I went to Fisk, and I was like, wow, it's just so different. But, you know, the home.
Yeah, we went to a conference in high school at Meharry. So that Meharry is in the book.
So no, I'm glad that you're doing that, because it will be great once you do it to connect with high school counselors. So that you can get your book, have them, you know, that district buy your books for the high school counselors, because that's going to be, it sounds like it's going to help students to understand what these schools have to offer. And is that your angle with this?
I wanted it to be the angle for Hues of Africa, but I must admit that I'm having a difficult time getting into school. So I'm hoping that because this book will be about college, that they will be more open to it.
Right. So you've tried to get this book into schools and just haven't had that luck?
Just haven't had the luck.
Wow.
You know what? And I hate to say it, but remember, these schools did not want critical race theory. Okay? They rejected the books about critical race theory. And critical race theory is not simply about Black folks or Africans. And they rejected that. And principals lost their jobs over critical
race. Anyway,
I think that's such a travesty.
That's amazing. You lose your job because you want to teach the folk.
Yes,
real
yes.
deal. Like that's absurd. That's
rather
just,
teach a lie. They'd rather teach lies than to teach, and maybe it shouldn't be called critical race theory. Okay. If it had been given a different name, the way of the world, where we all came from, anything, but yeah. critical race.
They don't want us to learn more about how we're being treated. Yeah. I'm excited about this because I think, I really think that you can really go somewhere with this in the sense of the, college counselors, or, you know, dealing, you know, I think it's NACAC is there's a conferences that are for, admissions counselors, but I know there has to be one for high school counselors. And I'm trying to find out what that is, but you would be really great as, you know, one of the vendors on the tables kind of like thing where you're like, hey, I've got this book and look, it's telling you about the HBCUs. And this would be really great for your college career center to have a couple copies, right. you know, for students to see. And so, yes, it's a coloring book, like you said, per se, but it's really informational. And I'm excited to see it once it's done.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, you got to figure out what went well with the first book in between the first and the second. So I may not even put coloring on the book because I think people get too hung up on that word. They're hung up on that and not focusing on the activity portion of it. But yes, I expect for this book to do even better than the first book. The first book is my baby. I love it. It's excellent. There is no other book out there like it. But I'm expecting for the HBCU one to be bigger because of the college angle, because people rep their HBCUs. A lot of us got debt from these HBCUs. We better rep them. So it's kind of like we are proud of where we went to school at. And it continues way after high school. Yes. I mean, way after college, you have homecoming. So there are a lot of different, and then there's the sororities and the fraternities. I want to market to them. They're in the book. So there are a lot of different audiences that were not in this book that will be in the second book. So I am definitely excited about it.
No, you'll get a lot of traction from that because again, you know, going to the college counselors at the different high schools, I think that they would, you know, because they have to be able to be versed to talk about PWIs. They talk about them all day, every day. They need to also have a handle on, you know, giving a student the idea of going to a HBCU because there was such a stigma, you know, it's like, oh, if you go to HBCU, you're not getting a proper education. And I'm like, Camilla Harris, Interesting. She's the vice president. And where does she go? Howard.
HBCU. Thank you.
And I appreciated her when she did her speech at the inauguration where she did speak. That was the inauguration where she spoke, right? She did speak there. And she talked about, she thanked her sorority and then she thanked the rest of us, the Divine Nine, which are the historically black founded fraternities and sororities. And she thanked us for supporting her. And, you know, when you look at that, all of a sudden, you know, people are like, well, what's a HBCU? And so they're going to their phones and Googling HBCU. And then they see, oh yeah. It's like, oh, historically black college and university. And so then they, you know, so people have been like it's kind of been started to get on the map a little bit as far as folks wanting to know what is this HBCU? What is so special about Howard? And what is this thing, you know? And then there's this other guy. I can't remember his name. He went to HBCU as well. And he's out of Georgia or something. He's a senator. I can't remember. So don't get me messed up here. But it was just that, you know, when she became vice president, they were showing other folks as senators and mayors and different people from different states that also were HBCU alums. And so I'm just glad that at least that put folks on the map and that folks give it a chance. I know if I had a son, I would send him to Morehouse. And the reason being is I visited Morehouse and what I liked about Morehouse is the fact that they have to wear a tie every day and they all have to start their day in the chapel. And they do this recite piece. And I'm just sitting there like, you know, it's like, I am a black man and I, you know, it was just like so deep. And I said, wow. And so when they were walking out and I saw a student, I said, you guys do that every morning? And he said, yep, every morning. And I was like, wow. And that piece that you have that support and you have that encouragement that you don't get at a PWI. Now there's people like me that worked at a PWI that supported, but there's only one or two or five or 10 of us. You know, whereas when you go to Howard, that's like the mecca.
That's right. And that's the culture. of the HBCU campuses.
Right. And I know we only have 5 minutes, but just quickly, what can you say to one or two things that was different about learning social work at San Jose State and learning social work at Howard?
So I went to Cal State Long Beach.
I'm sorry. I gotta say, San Jose, you said something about San Jose. I'm sorry.
I did.
Long Beach State. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. So definitely at Long Beach State, I was in a 2-year program and it was me and one other girl. And I think she's half black. So that tells you who was in the program versus going to Howard. Everybody in the program is black and it's, you know, Afrocentric and kind of what we're learning. And then two, again, I was not involved on campus at all. And then I think Howard is like, you, not that you have to be involved, but there's something there for everybody. Like you should be, I don't care if it's the band, I don't care. Cause I was a grad student. So it was a little bit different, but I immersed myself. I was on the homecoming committee. I was the student council president. Like I involved myself in these things because I wanted the entire experience of what an HBCU is. There's no point in me moving across the state and not getting that experience and just going to school and going back to my dorm. So I think that was the difference. And the culture is to get involved. There's stuff, they call it the yard. What's happening on the yard today? What's happening for homecoming? So all these different things is like, why not get involved? Why not see what the culture is? Why not go to, you talked about them going to recite, but go to chapel. Like there are so many different things that you can do on this HBCU campus that is not necessarily there. And there's no knock against the PWI. Like Cal State Long Beach was great. I got my degree and, you know, we moved on. But I definitely say there is a difference in terms of the culture in itself. Wow. And then, of course, lifelong friends from, you know, Howard that'll always be friends. And, you know, and like you said, we're talking about the other people there. I have a really good friend that's white that went to Howard. So there are a multitude, but she was the minority.
Right.
Versus the other way around.
Right.
So it's kind of like those are some of the big differences between the two.
And this is what sparked you to want to do a book about the HBCUs.
Absolutely. Like I want to do different books about what encompasses my life. And so traveling is a huge part of my life. My Howard family or, you know, from me going there, that's a part of my life. I may do the next one maybe about church. That's a huge part of my life. So I wanted to focus on these different facets that affect me so that I can relate to them and then put it out there for others that can relate as well.
Right. Kiana, did you want to say something, honey? I thought I saw your hand.
I did have a question, but I don't think it's important enough, so no worries.
All questions are important, but I know we're running
out. Yeah, I was like, you
could ask that question, quit playing.
Oh, okay. So the question was really the on the yard. I was wondering where the origin of that terminology came from, because I believe that's the same terminology used in prisons. Is that accurate?
Oh, that's deep.
So the yard, well, I'm not really sure, and maybe we should do more research on the name of it, but the yard is literally, we call it the heart and the soul of the HBCU.
Yeah.
This is where everything is going on. You're meeting people, you're hanging out with friends, there's step shows, there's probate shows, there's political things. If there's something going on in the world, we're probably talking about it in the yard in that particular meeting space.
Yeah.
I know there was things that was going on at Howard a couple months. That was where they were organizing. This is where they're like, we're protesting what's going on. So this is like the meeting of the minds. This is where everything goes on. There's a saying where you can't walk on the grass because some of the HBCUs actually have people that are buried in those particular plots. So the HBCU yard is definitely, there are lots of different things going on for homecoming. There's a yard fest. So there are so many different things that are going on. I don't know the correlation between jail, which they do. You're right. They do call that the yard as well. I don't know the correlation between the two.
Or if there is a correlation, there may not be.
Exactly. So you're going to make me Google it once we finish to see if we can find any information about it. So no, that was actually a really good question, but it's funny you talk about the yard because I just worked on that particular page last night and it was funny because, and I'm like, how did that skip my mind? I was talking to my cousin. He went to Grambling. He didn't graduate, but he went there, and I'm like naming off everything I already have in the book. And I was like, what else? And he was like, the yard. I'm like, duh, why did I forget the yard? So this is why when you're authoring a book, you throw out suggestions and you get feedback from different people. And I'm like, absolutely. So yeah, the yard is definitely a special place and there could be millions of things going on a yard any given day, any given time.
Well, the yard is on every campus. They call the yard on every campus, which makes sense. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And that's where all students congregate. Exactly. That's where everybody congregates and everything is done. Anybody you want to find, you find them right there on the yard.
Well, right. Tiffany,
you're like, hey, let's meet up. I'll meet you here. Then let's go to the cafe or like, you know, or it's a break time. Let me go sit outside, you know, so that is definitely the time where that will be the main place. If you want to go somewhere, let's meet up there. Then we'll go to class or then we'll go to our next destination. And it's amazing to, you know, it's springtime. So a lot of the sorority fraternities had their probate shows in these last couple weeks. And that's talking about HBCUs versus California. Those lines, 20, 30, 40, 50 people, you know, down south on the East Coast, California can be one person online. Like, what? So there are definitely significant differences when you talk about that as well. That's a whole nother conversation.
Well, Tiffany, I am so glad that I met you and have the opportunity. I'm looking forward to seeing this HBCU activity book. But thank you so much. And when you have it ready, we want you to come back so we can talk about it because by then you'll have a lot of information about a lot of schools and we can definitely talk about that. But thank you so much for being our guest today. In the mix, conversations with Colette and Corliss, and we'll see you soon. It's time to go. Absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
I want to see your book. So let us know how to get your book. Put it in the chat right there.
I think you said Amazon and Walmart, Target.
Yeah, let me put the link really quick to Amazon. And so actually there's a hardcover and a paperback cover, and actually the hardcover is actually on sale right now. It's cheaper than the paperback, and it's actually really, really nice.
How much is it?
I think it was on sale for like $17 for the hard copy.
Soft copy is how much?
It went up to $18. So it's $18 on Amazon. Let me put the link in. But if you just look up Hues of Africa on Amazon, it'll come right up. But let me just put the link right here really quickly. So I think the hardcover is normally like $25, but Amazon put it on sale. So
okay,
great. Let me change this to everyone, and then we'll do it like that. And if you were to put it in on Target or Walmart, if you just put in Hues of Africa, it'll come right up. Target and Walmart, I think, sells the hardback, and then Amazon sells the paperback as well.
Okay.
The paperback right now is, I think it's $20 for paperback.
Thank you very much, Tiffany. It's been a pleasure, and we will speak with you soon. Have a good evening, everyone, and get this broadcast and all of the broadcasts right here on ITRNradio.com and on your favorite podcast platforms. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
For a story to tell. Good night. Cookie butt, what's the deep cookie butt? You want to give me butter, I just push it, you come hard. Bring it back, I started red, but you know you.